Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everybody. This is your host, Tim Roden. We're going to be trying a new show tonight, kind of a new format. I've got my son, Joel, here. Joel's excited. He just turned 14, so he's going to start doing a few shows with me. We're going to do some questions and answers. So, Joel, say hi.
Hello.
Yeah, he's a little excited to be here, but... we're gonna have a little fun. I don't know if I can answer these questions or I can't answer them adequately, but we're gonna try and we're gonna see just exactly what happens with this. You know, sometimes young men have questions they don't know about, but we're gonna have a little fun. So go ahead with the first one, Joel.
The first question is, in that battle in Joshua, when the sun stood still, was it recorded in other historical documents or legends?
Yeah. Okay. Well, the battle in Joshua, there was two battles, really. One was the sun standing still. The other was the sun going backwards. I'm not an expert in that, and I've heard some of the stories of it. I know with the sundial going backward there's more historical evidence with the second one, the one in Hosea, or the one in, not Joshua, but the one in Isaiah, where the sun actually went backwards. And yes, there is other legends. China would, of course, tell you about the sun, the day when the sun didn't come up, and then there was the day when the sun came up and then went back down. So, in North America, the story was kind of the opposite, where the sun went down, then came back up with the Hezekiah story, and, the day would not end. I think the Chinese story was the night that did not end. It just stayed dark and stayed dark and stayed dark. A couple things about that. A lot of I saw something interesting just the other day. It's talking about the Eye of Horus. The Eye of Horus, if you would put a picture of Venus up against a picture of Mars, and the pupil of the eye has always been associated with Mars.
Okay.
But if you put Venus behind Mars, it looks like an eye. Because Venus is a smaller planet Mars is a smaller planet than Venus is. Mars, most people don't realize, is a very small planet. Now, something happened there. If we got Mars behind Venus, or Mars in front of Venus, where was Venus? That Venus would have had to been outside of Earth. It now circles inside of Earth, right?
Okay.
So what happened to put Venus on an inside orbit versus an outside orbit? Now, the other thing was, Venus used to be on Mars used to be on more of an elliptical, where it actually came close enough where we could see the moons of Mars.
Ooh.
The book of whoever wrote the little about the Lilliputians, what was that book?
I don't know.
Yeah, that was Well, in that book it talks about I even know about the two moons of Mars. And at that point in time, nobody knew about the two moons of Mars. We didn't have a powerful enough telescope to see it. So we were able to get that powerful telescope, see the two moons of Mars. They're real tiny, extremely tiny. And it takes a powerful telescope to see it. You look at it with your normal 3-inch telescope that you go buy down at Sears. I guess you can't buy it at Sears anymore, but you buy it on Amazon, and you can't find it. So, what what actually happened there before the Hezekiah incident. We used to have 360 day years on almost everybody's calendars. Now we have 365 day years. Something happened meteorologically for that to happen. With that, we don't really know, but that's one thing that you could probably do some research on and come up with some answers. But there's a number of different sites. You know, Chuck Missler likes to talk about that incident and some of his talks. The Suspicious Observers has gotten into the subject lately, talking about catastrophism. And he's not a Christian, but he's starting to tell us that the universe is a lot newer than we previously thought, and so many catastrophes has happened that today what you see, those are not. He was trying to explain in the one with the Eye of Horus that the craters on the moon are not from impacts. They're from electrical events, and those electrical events came from Mars and Venus coming too close to Earth. So what exactly happened? We may have to get to heaven to find out the whole story, but we're learning more and more every day. So it's exciting things are happening with that. All right, give us the next question.
The next question is, do you think that heaven will be more like Eden? That, I mean, most of us, when we think of heaven, we think of this giant palace in the clouds and stuff. But I mean, will it be more like Eden, where we can reinvent stuff and, like, recreate?
Okay. Now, there's several answers on that. Of course, there is the New Jerusalem coming down from heaven, which is the big cube city that we talk about in Revelation chapter 21. And that won't be so much of a planet as, you know, it will be a big city. And some people think it will be above the earth floating out there. But the Bible also says there will be a new heaven, new earth. Now, the other part of the question is, what will the millennium be like? We know that God's going to clean up the earth when he comes down to rule and reign for 1,000 years. And many of us think that based on the book of Isaiah and what it says about the lion laying down with the lamb, which basically says the Noahic covenant is taken away with, where we're now allowed to eat meat, that will be taken away. We'll become vegetarians again. So, throw out the hamburgers. We'll be back to eating salads, you know, eating the leaves off the trees. Yeah. Because we won't have a need to kill, basically. You know, is a vegan diet good for you? I don't know, but that's a whole different issue. But will it be like it? I think so. I think the fact that a child will be 100 years old. Definitely before the flood, people were living 1,000 years, so a child could have been 100 years old. And so we'll be able, people will have long lives. How that's going to happen is anybody's guess, but of course, looking at the scientific evidence that we're seeing from creation research people, they're doing a hyperbolic chamber up at Creation Museum in on the Plexi River. What was that town we went to this summer?
I don't know.
Yeah, outside of Fort Worth. There's along the Plexi River, the Creation Museum. They're going to do some research and try to find out how things develop in that kind of atmosphere. You know, how will things be in the 1,000 years? Good question, and we'd like to find out. But will it be like it? I think so.
Okay.
During the 1,000 years, then afterwards there'll be a new heaven, new earth. Everything will be new again. Okay. All right, next question.
I was actually asking that question because I'm thinking, will we be able to like reinvent the technologies that we have?
Some of the technology we have is because of need, and so that won't be necessary. If we can travel faster than the speed of thought without an airplane, will we need an airplane? I don't think so. We won't need Google Translate because we'll be able to translate thoughts. And I believe this is how it's going to work. It's actually going to be thought process. You know, some of you can talk to your dog and dog seems to understand. Well, there's a thought process going on. Dog talks back. You know exactly what he's saying. Okay, he's barking at you. You know what he's talking about. But when a Chinese person comes up to you and starts talking to you real fast, there you go. And I have no idea what you just said. But, Vietnamese, you're like, huh, what'd you just tell me?
Espanol es un señor.
But Espanol, you'll say Espanol. But habla Espanol aquí. But, we had to learn Spanish. We had to learn Chinese. But I think in that day, we'll just be able to understand. And, it'll be an interesting process trying to figure out what God has in mind. And, we can speculate all we want, but God is the final answer on that. Next question.
What is the deal with the Jehovah Witnesses?
That is a 20-hour course. But basically, the Jehovah Witnesses, and I heard a good video on this. A guy by the name of Kim, I believe is his name, out of San Jose. I'm going to see if I can find real quickly where he is. I'll pull up on YouTube. Yeah. Yeah, watch it. Okay, yeah. Gene Kim pointed out the other day that we in Revelation, where it talks about those who say they are Jews and are not. Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses think they're one of the 144,000, and there are not, okay?
Okay.
So who's those who say they're Jews and are not? Well, Jehovah's Witnesses would be part of that. Reformed theology. Yeah, let's say the church has replaced Israel. No, it hasn't. Okay? They think they can claim all the promises given to the Jews. They can't. They say they are Jews, they are not. So what's the deal with the Jehovah's Witnesses? They think they are Jews and they're not. Okay? Everything is about Jehovah, but when Vince and I got on the conversation about it in one of our shows, he pointed out that every time you look and see Jehovah in the Old Testament, which would actually pronounce Yehovah or Yahweh, it's the Hebrew characters Yoh, He, Va, and He. And we don't know how to pronounce it. It's the unpronounceable name of God, some people say it. But what whenever you see it, and we went through and proved it by scripture that you're really talking about a pre-incarnate Jesus. Now, they think they're worshiping God the Father and that Jesus claimed to be God, but is not. He's just a son of God, which is what a lot of groups say, but they're not. Now the other thing with Jehovah's Witnesses, they think they have to witness to get to heaven. So they're going to be knocking on your door Saturday morning. They come into my store about 11 o'clock after they've done all this. They're there every Saturday. Yeah. We love them to death. We'll take their money anytime they want to come in. But I'm telling you, they are flat dead wrong, because They are not. Jehovah is Jesus and not who they say he is. All right, next question.
Where do bankers get their money?
They
yeah, coming off of these.
We've been listening to Alex Jones lately, have we?
No,
bankers are evil. Bankers, you know, it seems like they're dealing with everybody else's money, and yet, how are they wealthy themselves? Because it's based on borrowing. The whole banking system is, you put money into a savings account. They take that money and give it to a builder to build a house. The builder pays back that money with interest. Then they loan that money back out to the buyer, and he's paying back the money with interest. You buy a car, you pay it back with interest. You use your credit card, not your debit card. We're not talking debit cards here. We're credit cards. There's a difference.
I know.
But with your credit card, you're paying 15 to 21% interest. Where's that 21% going when you pay it back? Well, that 21% goes into their profit. They use that profit to pay their employees, to build their buildings. Now, they're as frugal as anybody else, and they will do things to make they'll build a counter out of marble, but it's cheap marble. So, you know, they look impenetrable. They do a lot, but you know, in reality, they probably make as much money as anybody else, but being that they handle so much money, they handle billions and billions of dollars, even in a local bank. We were in the bank this afternoon setting up some bank accounts. And it, you know, they take your $500, my $1,000, Vince's $5,000, $40,000, whatever he's got. You add it all up, you take the McDonald's down the street, the Burger King, all those people have accounts in the bank. Yeah, we used to talk about what money we would put in the bank every day, and it's a lot of money, okay? I would typically carry to the bank 3 and 4 times what I made in salary every 2 weeks to the bank on a daily basis. And all that money they can loan out and make a profit on that. Now it's not just the loans. They have other investments. They buy stocks. They buy they buy advertising. Well, they've got advertising. They've got employees' cost, all that. But you know, they've got a number of different ways to make money off of what they do. They're buying stocks, they're buying bonds, they're buying dividends, they're buying all that stuff. So they're making dividends off of what they do. And there's some, I was asking some people who dealt with annuities how they're able to guarantee a return. And they wouldn't tell me exactly what they did, but there are some investments out there that when they make it, it's a guaranteed return. They make their money, and then they have to have the money back in that account that night. So they put it out there, invest it. It's day trading, really. They do their day trading, bring it back. They have money, and they make money every day, no matter what the market's doing. So, all right, next question.
Next question. What's the difference between Bible and Baptist churches?
Bible and Baptist churches. Well, now we're getting to some esoterical questions there. But When you look at a, when you see a church out there that says Bible Church, they're generally an independent church, no real hierarchy. Now, when you see a Baptist church, there is a hierarchy, but not a good one. The Baptists are very loose in their hierarchy. If you listen to my interview with the president of the Southern Baptist Convention I did a couple years ago, you'll find that in reality, what they do is they have a convention every year, they elect leadership, but that leadership doesn't really set policy for everybody else. They do have an agreed upon set of doctrinal statements, and but there is a national convention. They get together every time they can. Yeah, they get together every time they can, or at least once a year, and they discuss policy. They discuss what the any doctrinal changes are. Are we going to stick to the sola scriptura? Are we going to stick to taking the Bible literally, or are we going to take it figuratively? You know, those kind of questions come up. But in a Bible church, they don't do that. They don't have a convention. They just... Yeah, the preacher usually goes to some place like Dallas Seminary, and then the church hires them. Or they come in and start a church. I've been in a number of fellowship Bible churches. There's one here in Longview. There's one up in Texarkana. But, yeah, generally somebody starts a church. He hires a few associates. They start doing church service. They have a one on Friday night. They're usually very good churches, but there's no hierarchy to answer to. So if the preacher goes bad in one of these churches, which I'd say rarely happens, but I'm sure it has happened somewhere, there's no real national accountability to reel them in. It's going to have to be local. So they're going to deal with a local local church situation. All right.
Okay. Next question?
Yeah.
Next question. Why are you so fascinated by bicycles? All of a sudden.
All of a sudden fascinated with bicycles. I don't think that's a Bible question, but yeah, I have ridden bicycles a lot this summer. It's just a way to stay fit. But yeah, bicycle racing is a fun sport to watch if you get into it. Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, the Vuelta de España, and then there's a lot of one-day races out there, a lot of small stage races, Tour of California, Tour of Utah, Tour of, what was it? Tour of Colorado was the summer. Yeah, there's it's a toy. I'm okay. Sorry, but it is a way to stay fit, and if your car ever breaks down, it's a way to get to work.
Okay, moving on to the next question.
Yeah.
What is the difference between the Catholic and Protestant beliefs?
Catholic and Protestant. Okay. That's that's a whole show. And anymore, that's a very interesting topic. In the 1500s, there was primarily just the Catholic Church. Everybody answered to the Pope. But when Martin Luther came around, he figured out the Pope was the Antichrist and tried to break away. Well, in doing so, the Catholic Church prosecuted him. And, you know, back then it was still just a state-run religion. You were supposed to worship at whatever church the king worshipped at, basically. The Catholic Church is more of a universal thing answerable to the Pope, where the Protestant is answerable to whatever they decide is going to be answerable. You know, in the case of England, the Archbishop of Canterbury is the head of the church. There's a number of different Protestant groups. Now, if you talk about the difference between Baptists and Protestants, and yes, there is a difference. I mean, we're told when we went to China to put Protestant as your religion. No, I'm not Protestant. I am a Christian, but as a in the Baptistic, I'm anti-Baptist, Anabaptist. In the Anabaptist movement, the Baptist saw that the Protestants had not broken far enough away from the church, and therefore they broke further. They went to sola scriptura, and they fought to change things. So, they didn't want the government involved in the church. Where with the Baptists, where with the original Protestants, the Germans became all Lutherans, the British became all Episcopalians, the Netherlands, they all become Dutch Reformed, the French, the Italians, all that, and Spanish stayed all with the Catholic Church. So,
okay, next question. It's not actually a question I wrote down, but my mom. But what do you know about Columbus?
In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Columbus, that's one of those questions that, do you really know who this guy is? But, we debate whether or not we should even celebrate his holiday. We had it this week. Did he really discover America? No, he did not discover America. I'll give the liberals credit on that one. He did not discover America. But what he did do was he started the era of colonializing America. So what he did was he planted the flag of Spain on American soil. The Vikings they may have been there, but they went back. They did not plant a flag permanently. When the British came on the Plymouth, to Plymouth on the Mayflower, they set up a permanent colony. And all that was because of Columbus set up the permanent colony in the Dominican Republic. And whether you like what he did or not, he brought Europe to the Americas. Because of Columbus, the Europeans started colonializing the Americas, and therefore, that's why today most of South America speaks Spanish, some of it speaks Portuguese, and United States and Canada speak English. Is all because of Columbus.
Okay. This next question is, are we going to take a 30-minute quick break?
You want to take a quick break? Let's take a 30-minute quick break. We'll be back right after these messages.
One of these messages.
Double sixes. Can't hit me now.
Let's see.
Oops. Snake eyes, I get to go backwards. Hitting you.
Hey, you can't go backwards in backgammon.
Sure you can. It's in the rules. If a player rolls snake
Let
eyes.
Let me see. You wrote that in there.
So it's still in the rule book.
Rules. They provide standards for people to live by.
Oh, yeah? Well, if I roll a 4, I get to knock your pieces on the floor.
There are standards God wrote for us in the Bible.
Oh, yeah? And if I roll a 5, I get to kick you in the foot.
Ow! Okay, I get to hit you on the head.
Wait.
What?
You didn't roll the dice yet.
Oh, yeah. 9! Ow!
As we walk away from God's standards and create our own rules, we create confusion.
Ow!
7!
If things aren't working out for you in your life, give the Bible a chance.
Let's play something less violent.
Hockey?
My rules.
Another message from Lifeline Productions, the comic strip of radio, at lifelinepro.com.
All right, we are back. And Joel, you got another question here.
Yes, I do. When you were, like, younger, like, after you were an adult, but before you got married, you went over to China, right?
Absolutely.
As a missionary.
Yes.
You mentioned that earlier about having
It was not as a missionary, but we'll go
yeah.
over that.
What do you remember about China?
Well, 1984, college group went over to China. It was part of the summer missions program, but we were not there as missionaries. The Chinese government would not allow you to come over as missionaries. So we went over there as college students. We took 3 hours of Chinese lessons every morning for 3 weeks in Shanghai at Jiaotong University. And then we spent, we did spend 1 weekend in Hangzhou, and then we spent 1 week in Beijing when I was there. Of course, we saw all the sights in Beijing. I don't think we missed anything. We saw the Great Wall. We saw the tombs, the Ming tombs. We saw the Forbidden City. We saw the
Terracotta Warriors.
We saw Tiananmen Square
yeah.
and all the sites around Tiananmen Square. And that was before the Tiananmen Square incident, okay? That was Tiananmen Square incident happened in 1989. We were there in 1984. But
Tiananmen Square incident?
Tiananmen Square incident where the all the students were protesting the government, and they decided to roll tanks into Beijing and break it up.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes I say I take credit for it, but I really can't take credit for it. I may have helped in that there were some people that, you know, I had some influence on, but I don't think any of them were really really there during for that riot. But you know, when you're there, you show people a picture of your house, or like, oh wow, I wish I could have that. And, you know, some of the stuff you had, and like, oh, wow, your guys are so lucky. So, you know, some of the envy, they probably thought they could protest and get a better life. So, but that's neither here nor there. But, I remember China. We visited a jade factory. We visited a shirt factory. We visited, we floated down the Huangpu River, which is the port river for Shanghai. It's a tributary of the Yangtze, but it goes right through the middle of Shanghai. Back then, most of the city was on the west bank of the Huangpu River. Now, if you see a picture of the city, the big buildings, the ones that are rivaling New York and Chicago in their size and scope, that's all on the east bank. Back then they had one airport. Now they got two airports. So, you know, and Shanghai even now has a Disneyland. So, yeah, there's a lot I remember, but basically I'll have to get out the picture book and show it to you someday. All right.
But you can't show picture books
tonight. I can't show it on the radio. Sorry about that.
Okay, the next question is a long question.
Okay.
Well, I guess long compared to the last couple of questions. What is the purpose of the four Gospels? How do they say a different thing and yet are supposed to say to be the same thing? Events.
Okay, you got with the Gospel. When you look at the Gospels, you got four different Gospels. You know, of course, it's the story of Jesus told by four different people in their own way. The Book of Matthew is a very Jewish book. Focuses on the prophecies of the Old Testament and how Jesus fulfilled them. It's often referred to as the kingly book, you know, proves Jesus is the king. Mark, some people think that Mark was written before Matthew. I disagree. I think Matthew was first, but Mark was the second one. There is no lineage. It just starts with Jesus being baptized. It shows Jesus as a servant. Luke was probably the third one. It was probably written in with the book of Acts, just to give a history for probably a history for the court case of a pall when they arrived at Rome, so that Caesar, I think it was Nero at the time, would have a chance to look over the case, get a background of what Paul, who Paul was and what he was all about. But included in that, he wrote the book of Luke just to have a background of it. But Luke is kind of shows Jesus as the Son of Man. He takes a lot of the history of the birth, the better history of the birth, and then a lot of details into some of the his message. But it paints Gentiles in that book in a very good light. So it's kind of the gospel to the Gentiles. The book of John was written many, 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 many years after the first three. Many think that the first three were kind of borrowed from each other to write. But with the book of John, John was trying to show that Jesus was the Son of Man. John was an eyewitness. Mark was one of the... Matthew was a disciple, and Mark kind of was secondhand. He got his information from Peter. And Luke, of course, was a companion of Paul, so he had to interview everybody to get his story. He wasn't firsthand, but he was a very good historian. And his can be brought up as being true just because he was trying to write a legal story. Make it legal.
I was reading on my thing that he was referred to as beloved physician.
Beloved physician, that's right. He was the beloved.
He was the detail taker.
Yeah, I don't know which book of the Bible talks about him that way, but one of them does. One of the Pauline epistles talks about Luke as a beloved physician. But in the book of John was kind of a John said, okay, you've heard their story. Let me give you mine. And he comes along and he tells you the purpose of his book. We had to kind of guess at the other three. But John tells you these things were written that you may know that Jesus is Christ, the Son of the living God. He was trying to prove that Jesus was the Messiah and Jesus was God. And there's seven stories in there. There's seven preachings in there. Or seven teachings before you get to the final, seven miracles, seven teachings, and then there's the final week. And he gives it from an eyewitness point of view because he was there for the whole thing. And he tells you what he saw and what really went down. And his is probably the most powerful one. It's the one I recommend people read first.
Mm-hmm.
But go back and read the other three because I like Matthew just because I coached the quiz team 1 year on the book of Matthew. It's a great book.
Yeah, but that first chapter of Matthew is really confusing.
No, it's not confusing. Just the first chapter of Matthew is about gives the genealogies. It's boring reading, but it shows you the genealogy from the kingly perspective.
Very useful.
The genealogy in Book of Luke comes from more Mary's line, Mary's line showing you how, it's kind of a roundabout way of getting to it, but both are, both of them came from the line of David, so, the whole thing was about trying to show you that Jesus is, has the right to be God. Or to be the Messiah.
Okay. So it's like how four different newspapers who all talk about the same event in different ways.
Exactly. If you watched, if you read the New York Post on 9/12, and you read the Dallas Morning News on 9/12, unless they're both getting their story from the same AP writer, they both... Yeah, New York Post probably had an eyewitness right there to write the story, right? But Dallas Morning Paper probably had somebody watching it on TV and wrote the story from what he saw there. So you get you, it's the same story, the same event, but two different perspectives.
Okay. Next question. Are you not done?
Go ahead.
Okay.
We got time.
Yeah. What is the role of a tax collector, and why in Israel?
In Israel.
And why were they hated?
Okay. Tax collectors in Jesus's day. Zacchaeus was a tax collector. Why were they hated? Well, understand that taxes, I don't care what your system of government is, you're going to get taxes. Hopefully you get lower taxes, the less control the government has, but you're going to have taxes. And tax collecting is going to be a hated profession anyway, because you're taking money that it was seemingly nothing in return. Now, in reality, you know, I give my money to the government, and hopefully I get back protection from the soldiers, because that's paying the soldiers to protect us. So we're getting various goods, various services like water, sewage, you know, when you pay your city taxes. You're getting infrastructure, roads. You know, Rome had some great roads, and those that tax money went to pay for those roads. But why were they hated was because the way of collecting it was, you know, it's kind of like giving tax collecting to a bunch of salespeople. They worked on commission, and they were told to collect so much in taxes, and anything they got above that, they got to keep. So those tax collectors would come in and ask for a lot more than they needed, and they were getting rich off of it. And nobody liked that.
So, like, the government said, okay, tax collectors, you charge them.
No. He would say to a tax collector, let's say, the tax collector of Longview, Texas, I need $50,000 in taxes collected here. And he would go out and collect $150,000 in taxes. And he kept the $100,000 and sent $50,000 to Washington, D.C.
Mm.
Okay?
That makes sense.
So now he's rich, and everybody else is poor because he took all their money. All right, next question.
The next question is one that, do good intentions count with God if we do not follow up with action? This one is one that Mom wrote down. And
you know how moms are. They want everything, all your T's dotted, I's crossed. Good intentions, if not followed up by... Do good intentions count when they're not followed up with action? Well, I'm not sure good intentions count with anything. It's what you do with it. Do you have enough discipline to do what you say you're going to do? I have the intention of starting a very large business, but if I don't go out there and actually start the process of going through all the regulations, forming a corporation, and collect it, start talking to banks about raising the money to do this business. All the good intentions of the world is for naught, because I don't have a business. Yeah, what does the Bible say? If I intend to do good but don't do it, it is sin. Okay.
Okay.
So, you know, it's missing the mark.
So,
the mark is the intentions I have. That's my goal. That's my mark. But if I don't reach that, I miss the mark, right?
Yeah. So I can.
So that's sin.
So I can lie in bed and dream about reaching my finished goal all day. But if I never get out of bed and go do it, it's worth nothing.
Absolutely. If I dream about playing a round of golf, did I play a round of golf?
No.
No. If I dreamed about riding my bicycle from here to Shreveport,
you don't get any stronger.
I don't get any stronger. I have to go actually physically go do it. You know, James says faith without works is dead. Yeah, if you don't put action behind your intentions, then you've missed the mark.
Okay.
Okay.
The next question.
Yeah, I've got 15 minutes to cover this one.
I actually skipped a couple questions back
okay.
here.
Okay, get the last one there.
What is your favorite book and why?
My favorite book? Are we talking about Book of the Bible or favorite book?
I have no idea. Mom wrote down this
Mom one. Wrote that question.
we'll ask both questions. What's your favorite
okay.
book of the Bible and what's your favorite book that
okay.
other people
favorite
written?
Book of the Bible, I think I mentioned it. It's Book of John.
Okay.
I like the Book of John just because of its simplicity and it's got some great stories of Jesus that just not covered by the other Gospels. My favorite book, though, oh, that is a loaded question. How many thousand books have I either read or listened to? I mean, if you don't have a book in your hand, if you're not reading something, I think you're missing out. Fiction, nonfiction, yeah, it's all doesn't matter. I do like the Left Behind series that LaHaye and Jenkins did. I've got the entire collection back behind me. I just put it up on the wall. I'm missing The Glorious Appearing, so I got to figure out what happened to that book. But it's a different colored jacket. For some reason, they made that white while the rest of them were black. I like that series. I've got my problems with some of the things he did. I think we know a lot more now that we could probably write a better version of that book. I've gotten into Grisham. I've gotten into Brad Thor. Brad Taylor. Number of other pretty interesting authors. You look on my bookshelf, I got Frank Peretti, I got Jan Caron. I love Jan Caron's stuff. I might not agree with what the Episcopalian Church does, but she makes Father Timothy a pretty good character there. Joel Rosenberg, I've got him. I've got Hey, okay. All right. Well, all I hear is music. Wow. So we're missing out on something here. All right. So I think I'm going to call it a show here, and we'll see if we can do a better job next time. All right. So we'll catch you either here, there, or in the air.